Good morning. We're still in first place. This is the morning shift.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
That was awful.
I am him. He is I, Squidbilly. You heard the sultry tones of Tiffany jumping in on top of me. And the All-American from Alabama.
Mm.
Don't ask him what the P in Michael P. Johnson stands for.
Mm. Mikey P. Mikey P, that is. Yeah, man.
Yeah?
No, I was just thinking when you said the Alabama thing, I thought you were going to talk about our buddy at Dukes and Bell last night at Buffalo Wild Wings.
I was going to get there.
Yeah, I thought that's exactly where you're going off top. I was like, here we go.
Tiffany,
we ain't even 3 seconds into the show. Here he goes.
Tiffany, you got to hear this. So we go
to the
Dukes and Bell remote at the Buffalo Wild Wings at Perimeter, I think is the proper nomenclature.
Yeah, it's literally in the Perimeter Mall parking lot.
And it's probably the nicest Buffalo Wild Wings I've ever been to.
It's awesome. That place is sick.
They've got a whole rooftop. They got an upstairs bar, which goes into a rooftop outdoor seating. And so it's really cool. And walk in, and I think Dukes and Bell had just started. And I see Carl makes eye contact with me. And then he looks at this other dude and starts pointing. And then pointing towards us. And I'm just like, what have I walked into already? Has something happened 3 minutes into a remote that I have to put my management hat on for? No, not at all.
Probably not. Okay.
I sit down. Mike sits down. And here comes this gentleman with this huge frame.
Wish I could remember his name.
The frame was so wide that he was carrying it that he was about my height. And so I have the same issues that he does with arm length. I was afraid he couldn't carry it. That's how big the frame was. Extremely nice man, but Mike, you have to tell Tiff what was in there.
It was a newspaper clipping. It was a newspaper clipping of when I was at SEC Media Days leading in 2009 college football season, and also met him at SEC Media Days over in Hoover. And met him a time after that. He also had a picture of that too, but it was all matted and framed. The picture of him at SEC Media Days, and then obviously the article written with my face in the paper, and actually
it was quotes from you.
Yeah, it was quotes from me. But you know what's funny? The quotes were from Ian Rappaport because he was our Bama beat writer at that point. And I thought that's the funniest
hilarious.
Part to me.
Now
but
you
yeah,
should send that to him.
He was I tagged him a tweet that Bo put out there. It was funny. You can check that out on both of our Twitters if you want to. But man, I thought it was just a cool event. I appreciate that guy stopping by, man. It was cool to meet a bunch of people and see a bunch of people and get out amongst the folks. I got a chance to do that Saturday night at Dudley's as well, man. Just it's always a humbling experience when something like that happens. Cool stuff.
The picture that he had Mike sign, I guess, was from a concert or something. And I was like, is that like, were you like 14 in that picture? Because he looked young. I mean, you looked really young in that picture.
Well, I was. Well, that was probably 2011, so I wasn't that young. But Day-Day stopped by, brought the little one through, man. Good-looking kid, man. Good-looking kid, dap me up.
Thank you. Thank you.
Man, good-looking.
Look, he gets it from me. That's right.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was funny, man, because I just straight bypassed Day-Day. He's like, what's up? I'm like, I'm talking to the kid, man. I usually speak kid language. You know what I mean? Let me get down there in this man's level. Let me get my dap. So that was awesome, man. And like you said, just a cool event to be amongst the folks, chopping it up. Carl and Mike always do a good job on those remote deals right there. But felt like a cool station event, man, to be a part of. So get out amongst the folks, have a few cold units.
I got home last night, sat on the couch, woke up, it was 9:30. I was like, uh-oh. And I could not go back to sleep. I ended up watching all of the second half of the Tampa Ravens game, which and we'll get to that in a minute because it wasn't much of a second half. But did you get anything last night?
The game. And then that was pretty much it. Got the bike, got the Peloton, got in. So I was excited to have that.
Oh, it finally arrived.
They arrive rather quickly how they distribute the Peloton
Prime.
Distribution system, I guess. That's how it works. So did my first ride. And then, yeah, called it a night.
Do we get to know who your instructor was?
I picked a Cody ride.
Cody.
He's hilarious.
Yeah, he chops it up. Yeah, he's
a
funny dude.
So it was a quick little thing, and then...
Do you know Cody, Day-Day? I don't know Cody.
Well, you should.
I don't have a Peloton.
You should know Cody. He's good people.
I don't have a Peloton.
Yeah.
you would just see him like on probably the socials or something. But I don't
he's
know what you follow. So
people,
your
yeah.
wife, Amy, would definitely know.
She probably knows, yeah.
Know who that is.
Yes. Yeah, he's definitely one of the more famous instructors that Peloton has. He is definitely the funniest instructor that Peloton
by
has.
Far.
I've taken a couple of his rides, and he says stuff where I literally am like, can I pause this thing? Can I pause the workout? Like, cracks me up. But that's awesome, man. Glad you got to hop on that. I know that you've been wanting to get that in.
Yes, I have. Well, this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, so Monday Night Football, and the Buccaneers did not fare so well. I'm not just talking about the loss that they were handed by the Ravens, 41-31, but they lost a lot of key pieces on that offense, being Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, who was dealing with the hamstring injury. As for Godwin, it was some sort of ankle injury, and it did not look good. He was actually carted off. Baker Mayfield was showing his frustration while he was leaving the field, and it was pretty late in the game as well. So those are two big components that make that Bucs offense go that we don't know what their status will be.
Well, I can tell you Godwin's done.
I was trying to be optimistic until the official word came.
Yeah, he's done. He won't play. He won't play Sunday.
Let me say this. Let me just say this because I had this injury. All right, there is a number of different layers when you have a dislocated ankle like that. Mine was unfortunate because there was torn cartilage. Some people, like I think I want to say maybe Kenyon Drake, I know, had this injury. Maybe Dak Prescott as well, where there's not torn cartilage, and you bounce back a lot faster.
Yeah.
So that'll be something they have to look at. Also, you know, is the fibula intact and things like that. But definitely ugly. And, you know, you never want to see that happen, and you could see the reaction from the teammates for sure. But there's like – it's almost two different injuries when you talk about a dislocated ankle the way he had when you talk about, you know, the cartilage and what you have to do afterwards – microfracture surgery, all that kind of stuff, to get back on the field.
Yeah, and I know Schefter tweeted that a dislocated ankle would end his season, and he is a free agent to be after this season, but I think Tampa will try to keep him. Now, I just don't think either guy is going to be as bad as Evans' hamstring looked after that the attempted catch in the end zone where he went down and you could tell it just – the pain was so immense that basically everything else went to grab the hamstring. I don't see how either one of them play it. I would put them down to Trey Palmer, Sterling Shepard, and Jalen McMillan as their top three receivers. And Shepard would be a guy that's been on their practice squad, and I don't think he was up last night. He was up for our game because Jalen McMillan and Trey Palmer were both down when we played them a few weeks ago.
Not replace Mike Evans, and the fact that he was grabbing at the hamstring and trainers were trying to assist him at different points during the game while he was on the sideline, he was kind of waving them off like, no, I'm going to keep playing through this. And it's unfortunate because he's a key component to that offense.
Yeah, hamstrings are just one of those things you have to rest, right? And I don't think he practiced a couple of days last week and kind of building back from that, and it jumps up and bites him again. And don't forget, too, if you look at the Bucs injury report from Saturday, because they were, you know, 2 days out, the depth at wide receiver for them, they had a couple of wide receivers out of this game. I think the 5 and 6 guys, Rakeem Jarrett and Cameron Johnson, were both out of this game. So that depth becomes an issue for sure at the wide receiver spot. It's unfortunate, and you listen to all those guys talk about how Chris Godwin's such a good dude, deserved better than that, and you know, you hear Baker say that, and obviously a number of people throughout that team, you know, it sucks when you see a buddy like that get carted off. So I don't want to pass over it in terms of what the output is, but leadership-wise for that team, I mean, those two guys are kind of the heart and soul of that unit, so that's it's tough to see.
And it goes without saying what Mike Evans means to them. But I remember when Chris Godwin was just getting to the Bucs and just coming on. He wasn't even actually involved in a role in the offense yet. And I was already getting notes on him of, hey, during training camp, we think this guy is like going to be it. We think really highly of this guy. Good things were going to come for him. And that ended up being what's happening. So I do think what you were saying, Bo, with the contract and all that kind of stuff, free agency, I do believe they'll do right by him because the Bucs have shown to do that in the past, at least get a deal done with Evans back then, if you remember that, when all that was coming up. So we'll have to see what happens. But certainly, when did the Falcons get them again?
Sunday,
right? So,
it's going to be two. Honestly, I know that you just say Mike Evans and you say Chris Godwin, you can go, those are, there's nothing the Falcons could have injury-wise that's bigger than that. But we were talking about in the office before. I think if Matthew Bergeron can't go and you still have Ryan Neuzel, I think that's a huge deal for the Falcons too now, because you've got one of the better defensive fronts that they, I mean, Vita Vea is, on to me, on Ryan Neuzel, is not a matchup that's good for us. I didn't think it was great.
Vita Vea against anybody is not a matchup that's good.
It's very true. But they also got Kalijah Kansi back, and that guy's a pretty good player as well. I just think that losing two-thirds of your interior offensive line, if that's the case, we don't know what the situation is with Matthew Bergeron and if he'll play or not, because he could be in there. Yeah. But losing if Bergeron and Neuzel, and Dahlman's not back, and it's Neuzel, that's tough. And remember, Neuzel got banged up in the game Sunday too, so you don't know where he'll be. I think it was just kind of got rolled up on the way he was in a pile, but you never know how that's going to feel for him.
No, I completely agree. And not only that, I was already looking at this game, and I want to say, I of course, you guys know I'm an offensive lineman, so I'm looking at it going, okay, Ryan Neuzel struggled against Vita Vea last time. I want to see what changes they make, because we've talked about it. Our run game is so – it's not – vanilla is not the word, but there's not a lot to it. Like, there's only a few layers, right? And so I want to see what Dwayne Ledford and Zach Robinson have kind of planned for this matchup with Ryan Neuzel and Vita Vea, if to your point that Ryan Neuzel is allowed to go, right, health-wise. So – there's a number of different things you can do. You can change some of the blocking schemes and do some different things, but that's going to be one to keep an eye on, I think, for me on Sunday for sure.
More Falcons on the way when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back here on the Morning Shift, 2 days post a rough loss for the Falcons against the Seahawks. And in that game, we heard Coach Raheem Morris during halftime and even after the game talking about how he felt like the team just felt kind of flat and that things weren't necessarily clicking on offense or on defense. So let's focus specifically on defense. So he did get to speak with Dave Archer on the Raheem Morris coaching show. You know, the pass rush has been an issue, but he is starting to see some positives.
It's both.
Yeah.
You know, you want him to get him on the ground, but it is definitely positive improvement by those guys. I believe yesterday we had the one sack by JSW. Mm-hmm. He made it a great move and great power rush. We had another, which you thought it was a sack at the time, when you get the fumble snap, muff snap out the backfield, and Rook made a really good rush and got around there and got a chance to touch him down. And then we had the intentional grounding with Damone getting elevated yesterday, making a play for us on that edge, being able to cause some stuff like nature. Then the hurries and all the stuff that was happening with Grady and some of the interior guys was really positive. It was really trending in a positive direction. And we just got to improve on that performance and get it better every single week.
So right now, the Falcons have a league worst 6 sacks, and their pass rush win weight rate. I knew I was gonna
win weight.
Win weight. Can't do it. I have a trouble with the R's, like wrestle and W's. But anyway, that's another story. So 34.4%. So that's also 6 worst in the NFL.
Well, this was their best game as far as pressures go. I mean, I think they pressured on 50% of the times they came of his dropbacks, which is good, except for the fact that I think he was like 6 of 6 for 92 yards in some of those. So it was that was not when they blitz, I should say. So getting home is the problem for me. I've heard people talk about being aggressive. I think they've been very aggressive at times in how they've came after the quarterback. The problem is they haven't won enough, and I mean win by getting the quarterback on the ground. Too many times guys get flushed. Also, correct me if you think I'm wrong, Mike, but I feel like the coverage we play in the secondary is a detriment to the pass rush. When you play off, and a veteran, we've played a lot of veteran quarterbacks. When they see that you're coming and you're playing 7 to 8 yards off of a receiver, they're going to get the ball out quick.
Yeah, but I think it goes hand in hand, right? I think when you play that kind of coverage, a lot of times you play it because you're not sure if you're going to get home, right? I mean, that's kind of – I think it kind of goes back and forth, right? I mean, when you walk up and you're impressed, it's like, dude, I'd love to press a guy, you know, and I know we can cover him for a little bit downfield, but if I thought we could get home up front, we'd walk up and press him right now, you know, and try to get home with just our four-man rush or maybe adding a fifth guy in there, but I just don't think that's what they see right now. And I think Jimmy Lake is trying to do anything and everything he can to make sure to kind of keep, you know, to tread water just a little bit. So I don't know. I think it's a back and forth listening to Reem's comments right there. It just, I love the fact that he's trying to be positive about it. It just thinks that we can kind of off the top of our head pick out like the four plays. You know what I mean? Like I'm okay, just like, well, dude, yeah, no, I'm with you. But I did see some good things. I don't want to take away from any of that. But nonetheless, I hope it starts to ramp up.
Well, not to go down a different path, but I don't see Mike Evans and Chris Godwin next week line up. I might be more open, and maybe they will be more open to coming up and pressing unproven receivers or guys who haven't produced to that extent in the league, because maybe I can get to Baker.
Yeah. Well, and here's what I'll say. Baker is agile. Mobile, I guess, is the word, but I'm going to call him more agile. He moves around in the pocket well, still looking to throw downfield. And that's something we talked about through the first 3 or 4 weeks. When you looked at the matchups you had, it was like, you know, these are not easy guys to rush. Last week really did line up in terms of what Geno Smith is, what that offensive line is. And so I think when you look at it from that angle, hopefully that thing can kind of correct itself a little bit. You try to get home on Baker.
Well, there's decisions that are involved in deciding on when you want to try to rush the quarterback. That did sound repetitive, but Coach Raheem Morris, he made more sense when he talked with Dave Archer on the coach's show.
You know, the hardest times when you get down to those seconds at the end of halves, you know, it's like a Hail Mary situation. How many are you going to rush? You know, some people rush an overload. Some people rush three. Some people rush none, you know, depending on what the situation is when you're talking about the Hail Mary situation. This wasn't quite the Hail Mary. This was kind of the must out of bounds or the ozone type plays that you hear about a little bit on television where it must be out of bounds or in the end zone. So when you're protecting the out of bounds because you throw it in front and we get a tackle, the half's over, that could be disastrous for them. We're talking about those guys like we did a couple years ago when they couldn't finish that thing in the playoffs a couple years ago. But what you want to get done for us, man, is get this guy to throw the ball in bounds, or then throw it out of bounds, settle over his head. They kick it a long field goal. They either make it or miss it at that point. And at this point against us, people have been nailing those things. But, you know, you can't let that guy across your face to be able to go do those things. There's a lot of thought process going in that. And we went with the outside two-man version of what we wanted to do. And we can't let that guy get across our face from a safety standpoint. And we got to make those plays.
And he's talking about that touchdown to Metcalf in the first half where I think they only sent three guys. And there was no pressure at all on Geno. He stood back there. And, again, we talked about it yesterday, A.J. played outside, so he's funneling that receiver inside because he's got safety help. And Raheem just told you, the safety never crossed the face of the receiver. And so D.K. Metcalf gets a touchdown in the end zone, and you think, oh, well, A.J. Terrell got burned again. Wasn't on A.J. Terrell.
Yeah. Well, not only that, There's a point in time, like 30 seconds or a minute before that, where you think our offense is going to march down the field, mm-hmm. and they're not able to get it done. And so you hate that you even put your defense in that situation. But, I mean, look, I just keep coming back and kind of replaying plays in my head. There was a number of times you walk up and you kind of bluff with a six-man front, and you walk Nate and Caden up, you know, in some of the A gaps or B gaps, and you kind of give that look, and then you bail, and you hope in those instances you run the twist games with Matthew Judon. Matthew Judon has not been good on twist games. I mean, like, it's unbelievable to watch him. He's a good edge rusher. He got stonewalled a number of times in this game, but then they was like, oh, let's run a twist game. Let's run a TE, see if we can get Judon on the inside to pressure. It ain't working either, man. So I will be curious, to your point, how they play the receivers this coming Sunday, because I think you have to mix up coverages. Obviously, you're a heavy cover three team, but you don't even run it half the time. That you're on the field, that's your kind of your base. I'll be curious to see how physical they do want to get, though, with some of these younger guys that they'll be playing next weekend.
Well, and I do think, did I dream that Troy Anderson might practice this week? I thought I saw that reported, and I need to double check because I took a long nap last night. All I remember is waking up and watching the Tampa Bay game.
Buffalo Wild Wings, a little too much for you.
Well, it was just a long day. But I swear I saw that Troy Anderson was going to practice, and I think that could be huge in the run game. Nate Lehman back. Because
you are correct.
I'm correct?
So, set to return on Wednesday.
See, that's huge because I think then you could have instances where you have all three linebackers on the field at once, and I mean inside linebackers with Caden Ellis, Troy Anderson and Nate Lambin, because I think this team, they've kind of developed a three-headed monster at running back. quietly, Tampa Bay has one of the deepest running back rooms in the league with Sean Tucker, Rashad White, and Bucky Irvin. And Irvin's their home run guy. And I think you have three guys now. They might want to run the ball, but you could also use Caden Ellis in situations where he's coming off the edge, or maybe he's used in some kind of twist, stunt, blitz, whatever you want to, you know, whatever you want to dial up, and he could be an extra pass rusher. Because one thing Caden Ellis does a really good job of is discipline in the pass rush game.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Not only that, but you think about the possibilities, and I don't know what Jimmy Lake's got in his back pocket. I don't know what these guys have cooking up. I know that you've seen some odd front this year. I think that Caden Ellis could be a part of that. Obviously, if you can move Troy Anderson in there, it kind of adds that speed onto the field in some of those situations where maybe you take out a D lineman and you're able to put those three guys on the field. And like I said, you feel good about the speed for that. I will ask you this, too. Have you noticed that we really have not seen much of Zach Harrison this year? And his snap count seems to be down. And it seems like when he's on the field, I notice him because it seems like he's wreaking havoc. But we haven't seen much of him, and I'm just curious how that he kind of fits in this puzzle, and wonder if you'll see more reps out of him eventually in the pass rush game, because he seems to be decently disruptive, especially when he's in a four-man front and he's over one of those guards to be able to do some things. So I'd be curious to see how that all pans out. But you got to find something. I guess my overall kind of theme as we talk about it right here is we keep throwing stuff at the wall and wondering what if, what if, what if, and Raheem's like, you know, we're getting better. It's got to all come together at some point, man. You have to have one of these games where you can actually affect the passer and not have to, you know, kind of keep your finger in the dam on the back end.
And Harrison only played 11 snaps on Sunday, but you know who did get a lot of snaps Sunday and who I thought had his best game of the season? I know he didn't get home, but I thought Arnold Ebiketie played his best game of the season.
I thought you were going to say Damon Harrison. I was like, yeah, pretty sure it's his only game of the season.
No. Ebiketie played 50% of the snaps on defense. He got two less snaps than Matthew Judon. And basically, it was Judon, Smith-Williams, and Ebiketie, the three guys that were consistently on the edge coming after Geno. And obviously, Damon Harris had a couple plays in there as well. He got – actually, Damon Harris played a lot of snaps.
Both of them had to, honestly.
He took Zoe's snaps, but I know with Zoe out, Ebiketie got more. I thought Ebiketie played pretty well. I know he didn't get home, but I thought he made some plays in the run game and was right there. He actually overran the touchdown that Kenneth Walker caught.
I can't remember when James Smith-Williams went out. Refresh my memory. I can't remember what point of the game that was.
I think it was in the second or third quarter.
And you got him and Zoe out. You got to kind of plug that up with a bunch of those guys.
But he came back in.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I know he did, but I'm just saying that that's going to be added snaps too.
The NBA season starts tonight, but the Hawks in action tomorrow will set the table on the other side. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This music makes me feel like basketball. Feel like it's something you'd hear before, I don't know, maybe a basketball show, maybe ahead of a game before maybe a
basketball,
tip.
But like the movie Semi-Pro. Like that's,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I could see that too. Well, the pros will be in action. The NBA season tips off tonight. Your Atlanta Hawks are in action tomorrow against Brooklyn. Of course, you can hear that right here on 92.9 The Game with your pregame at 7 o'clock, and tip, of course, at 7:30. Big news, though, for the team. They reached a contract extension with Jalen Johnson, so that is significant. The team announced that Monday night. Of course, they had until 6 p.m. on Monday to try to reach terms with him before it spilled over into free agency. So luckily, they were able to get a deal done. And according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution sources, the deal is worth $150 million over the next 5 years with no options.
That'll work, right? That'll work.
I'll take that.
Give that man his zeros. I like it. Obviously, when we had Quinn on last season, that was kind of during the Jalen Johnson injury, and we talked to him just about how much Jalen meant to this team and what Quinn was trying to get accomplished. He basically said, look, man, he's the straw that serves the drink, right? He's the guy that kind of does it, can push the ball up the floor. He's got length defensively. And I think just overall, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong, he's a guy that kind of outlines the blueprint for the Atlanta Hawks in terms of player development, right? Spent a number of seasons being developed. Obviously, all season highs last year, and you didn't know what to expect from him going into last season when you get rid of John Collins. But rises to the occasion, man. And when you look at what the future is, a big part of this organization is Jalen Johnson. To me, he's the most untouchable player on the roster, and that includes Trey. So I think the money's well-deserved. He does a lot of good things. And like I said last week, man, I'm ready to be heard again by this Atlanta Hawks team. I'm ready to be heard again. If that's what's in the card, so be it. But I'm ready to get this thing tipped off, see what we got.
Well, you're all in with these three. You're going to battle with these. These are your three, your main three guys, Trey, Jalen, and Risha Shea. And I think it's important to say that and to know that's where you're going and give those guys – now that everybody can kind of rest, especially Jalen can rest easy. He's not thinking about a contract all year. He had his breakout year last year in, I think, 56 games where he averaged 16 points, which was 11 over his career average before that. So, look, go get the job done now. Go get us in the playoffs. Let's not be in the playoff, the play-in round this year. Let's go get into the season and try to make a run at least at the worst, an Eastern Conference Finals.
Mm, let's do this thing.
And you guys pretty much echoing what Hawks general manager Landry Fields said, talking about Jalen Johnson, talked about his continuous growth and improvement year to year that he has developed into a significant part of our team, and we're thrilled to continue his development in Atlanta. Let's get a check on some college football. So there has been some shifting in the AP poll, and we did not get to dive into that a lot. So let's look at the rankings. One is Oregon, perfect on the season at 7-0. Two, Ohio State, 5-1. Three, Penn State, 6-0. Georgia is now 4, so they did move up a spot. They are 6-1, and Miami is 7-0 at 5. As for Texas, after that loss to the Dogs, they fell to 6 at 6-1 now on the season.
Yeah, it's weird. It's one of the – I kind of actually enjoy the fact and like the fact that the voters have put Miami down where they have, because they've struggled so mightily at times this year. I'm not sure who Miami is. And Penn State hasn't really gotten – I don't know – Penn State's played very well, and they've beat everybody in front of them, but to that point, who have they beat?
Yeah. Well, you know what? What's funny about it, too, and kind of looking at this poll and kind of mulling it over, it just feels like, and obviously Oregon at one, deservedly so at one, but when you look at Georgia, too, you're like, man, that just seems like a runaway train right now, right? It just seems like the way they played last week, you're like, Who's going to step in front of that one and be able to stop that? Seems like they're playing extremely well right now. But you look at it, it's a Big Ten heavy right there in the top five. It feels like Texas slides back, like Tiff said. I don't know, man. Like, I still look at all these teams in the top ten and wonder myself who's good. I think Georgia's definitely, in my opinion, the best one-loss team. Ohio State could be there, but there's just a number of teams because of how big these conferences are that won't play the opponents that you're used to seeing them play. And so you don't have the hiccups that you would have normally seen for teams like Penn State and some of the other squads that are up there in the top 10.
Is it weird to you that LSU is the quietest number 8, 6-1 in like that LSU's ever been 6-1? It just feels,
because not everyone's talking. I mean, you had Tennessee on the up and up this year, and LSU again was talked about going into the season, but then they lost to
USC.
So,
it is weird,
but they beat Ole Miss.
But they beat Ole Miss,
and no one talked about it because it was the same night.
Well,
Oregon.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
it's, Ole Miss had a stinker out there as well, where they lose to Kentucky. So that's one of the things that you look at and you go, both of those teams though, and they'll face off. Both those teams, LSU and Texas A&M, who will face off this weekend. Very, very quiet. A&M had the loss to Notre Dame, and it's just like nobody's really paid attention. Yeah. And now all of a sudden they're like leading the SEC. That's a matchup of two teams that are unbeaten in the SEC this year that you'll see this weekend.
I should tell you guys, so I get a big matchup on Friday night this week in Vegas, and that is Boise State, because you have to say Boise. People don't like it when you say
Boise. That's
the
dirt cutter thing.
So I'm just going to say Broncos to steer clear in the broadcast.
Is it Boise or Boise?
Boise.
Boise. Yeah,
that was a dirt cutter.
But they get very, it's just like out there, Nevada is Nevada.
It's not Nevada. It's not Nevada.
So, of course, I have UNLV. So, it's Boise. We'll just say UNLV.
Man, they're difficult out there.
You know? But I do get to see, I know Mike, outside of yesterday after the show, you'd asked me about Haj Malik Williams, so we got to talk to him. That's what I was also doing yesterday. I blanked out when you asked me this morning. We had production calls on a Monday, which is very unusual.
Yeah.
But the game is on Friday this week. So we did get to talk to him. Excellent kid, great story, transferring in from Campbell and then making a huge impact with the UNLV program. And then, of course, we're going to get to see Ashton Jeanty, who is in the Heisman Trophy conversation, and we will talk to them, I think that's Thursday or something this week. So, but anyway, that's going to be fun to watch. He is close to college football's single season rushing record held by Barry Sanders. He's close to breaking it. So we'll see if that ends up happening.
I'll be rooting for him for the Heisman. I'm hoping he's able to do it because here's the thing. Boise State aside, whatever the record is aside, I am a fan of when guys are able to do it from a place like Boise State. I miss the days when you'd get the Randy Mosses of the world and the Steve McNairs and whoever else it was. It's turned into kind of a who's the best player on the best team kind of award, it seems like, the last 10, 12, 15 years. I'll be rooting for a guy like that, and I can't wait to see him perform on Friday night because I think that's a fun matchup.
It is. And then, you, of course, Boise is 18th ranked in the AP poll, and UNLV is the 25th ranked team
Good for them.
The AP poll.
Good. So. Their quarterback leaves.
Matchup.
Their quarterback leaves. The other guy gets plugged back in. I think we talked about that line that week. They were still favored by like 6 or something, and I was like, man, that doesn't make any sense. That's a Vegas knows that they're going to be good. They've played well, and so they've kind of fought their way in. Shout out to Barry Odom out there for the job he's done with that program that has always been fledgling, and yet here they are rising to the occasion, even missing their quarterback. So
yes, they have, and this should be a fun one to see on Friday night. When we come back, guys, we'll look ahead to Sunday because the Falcons are taking on the Bucks. Lots of injury news ahead of this one, including two key stars for Tampa Bay that might be missing in action for this one. So stay with us. We'll be back at the top of the hour on the morning shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game. We are in our 7 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Zero Res Smart Lasting Clean. We have an early edition of the wake up call that needs to happen right now. It is
for
myself. I want to shout out to listener that boy Dizzy for asking me about the AP poll that I just read. Turns out it was a different poll. It was like a from the publication I was reading, it was their own poll. So the actual AP poll, I'll just run through the top five again.
Oh, I was commenting on the AP poll.
I was, you were.
I said, yeah, Georgia at 2 and LSU at 8.
Yeah, that's.
I didn't even hear
yeah, yeah.
You.
No, it's one of those things where I'm reading the same thing as I'm reading the AP poll, and then I kind of caught the end. I think he said Georgia at 5, and I was like, yeah, Georgia at 2 seems like
you
runaway
know,
train.
I just want to make sure everybody's on their toes. That's all. Oregon at 1, Georgia 2, Penn State 4, Ohio State, or Penn State 3, Ohio State 4, and Texas 5. So I'm going to stop there because, yeah, I quit. So anyway, let's bring you back to the present.
Okay, that makes sense of why someone's like, why Jacob is hitting me up on Twitter like, ESPN has Georgia at 2, and I'm like, yeah, the AP does. Yeah, and then he sends me the AP poll, and I go, yeah, that's what I was talking about. Now it makes sense.
Now you know. You don't have to go to a Twitter war. See, I caused a fight, and I didn't even mean to do it because
you out here.
I have not completed a cup of coffee yet, and that seems to be the root of most of my problems in the morning. So
we're going to need you to chug coffee, ride the Peloton, whatever you got to do so you read the right poll.
That's, you know, so I just want to make sure you guys are out there really listening. So back to the Falcons.
You didn't realize it was sports trivia with Tiffany.
Bucks. Sport, yay, sports. That's what my girlfriends say that don't follow.
Jeez.
Yay, sports. I'm going to get one of those sweatshirts. All right. Falcons and Buccaneers, big matchup on Sunday. We went through some of the injuries that are going on with the Buccaneers team stemming from Monday Night Football. We saw Mike Evans go down with a hamstring. Unfortunately, they lose Chris Godwin, who had a severe ankle injury, a dislocated ankle. So, again, he's probably out for Sunday. We're not sure what the stats will be for Evans. Vita Vea, though, coming into that game, also dealing with a hamstring injury, but he did play.
Yeah. I'm curious to get you guys' take. I know there's been a couple of articles. I think CBS had one, ESPN. It was kind of the headline as far as the Chris Godwin goes. It's like a lot of people looking past kind of the, you know, the Baltimore win last night in this game and just saying, should Chris Godwin have been playing at this point in the game? I don't have a problem with it. It's a 10-point game at that point. I understand kind of, you know, some of the hesitations with it, but I think they're thinking if they can get a quick strike and maybe get an onside, which they already had at that point. But I know that Buccaneers fans are frustrated with the fact that with a minute left in a 10-point game, you now lose one of your best players. I didn't have a problem with it. I don't know how you guys felt.
I'm a little bit torn on it because they had – Baltimore pulls their starters offensively, and they left their starters in defensively because Tampa had their starters in. That's why Roquan was in there. He's the one that made the tackle on Chris Godwin, not intentionally to hurt him. He just made the tackle, and it just kind of happened. So I'm a little torn on it because it felt a little garbage time-ish with at the fact that it was like 41 to, I think, 10 or 18 or something at one point.
Yeah.
And you kind of got a few touchdowns that were just, again, you felt like they were just kind of playing off and you had called off the dogs offensively. But if you think you can win as a head coach and you know the importance of the game because you win that game, you're in first sole place of – first place in the division instead of a tie that you're actually out of with a tiebreaker currently, yeah. Then I don't have a problem with it. It is definitely up for question considering it was at one point 41-18. So it's definitely up for a question because you've already lost Mike Evans. Do you need Chris Godwin in there to score against a prevent defense and move the ball?
I'm also curious what their depth chart looked like during the game. I mentioned it. Some of their depth pieces at wide receiver were out last night, and you're also out Mike Evans. I don't even know that in the time that, you know, what that wide receiver room looks like at that given that point in the game. Not saying you're wrong. I mean I understand where you're coming from, but they just recovered an onside kick. They're 10 points down. There's a minute left. If you can get Chris Godwin to maybe break free right there, maybe you do it again getting field goals. You're not that far out of the realm of possibility at that point.
But they came in as healthy as they've been at wide receiver because when we played them, Trey Palmer and Jalen McMillan, two guys that they want up and that are going to get time in their system with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin healthy or not, were on the field, were playing last night, and they were down when we played them. So they had to elevate Sterling Shepard from the practice squad when we played them. So I think they felt better about their wide receiver room going into the game last night, but then Mike Evans obviously aggravates that hamstring and then the unfortunate injury to Chris Godwin. I mean, I just see it an opportunity here for us defensively to maybe play coverage different and maybe help generate some more pass rush with two, I don't know how to put it, big play threats out of the game. Now, Jalen McMillan can stretch the field himself, but he hasn't yet to this point.
So if you're looking at the other side of the ball, what are the possibilities of Vita Vea somehow isn't able to go? He was dealing with the hamstring going into Monday Night Football. He did play in the game. We'll have to learn more about what his status is the rest of the week. But again, he's a big, big component of the Bucs defense. So Coach Raheem Morris talked to Dave Archer on the Coach's Show about how they can try to stop him.
You know, we joked the other day when we had that mix-up, and Bijan almost passed him by thinking, no way I got this guy, and he did not. So, you know, no matter how many times you see that, he's not responsible for him. But Bijan was thinking the same thing. But, you know, Vita is one of those guys you got a game for him. You got a game plan for him. You got to get hands on him across the board. You got to make sure he's double-teamed when you can. He's powerful. He's strong. He can play the run. He can play the pass. And we don't need him crawling on us again. You know, he's a very good player that can make a lot of plays. And we got to find a way to limit his effectiveness on the game, no matter what he's doing.
Hey, we actually talked about that play the Friday after the game.
Yep.
Because, Tiff, I don't know if you remember the play, but Vita Vea it's almost like some type of kind of little stunt with him. And McGarry and Lindstrom just let him go. And Bijan's like, that's one of those, oh, blank, because that's 350 pounds.
Yeah, what happened is, and actually this defense has kind of popped up a little bit, the double A gap mugs. I know a lot of Georgia fans paid attention because they did this a number of times against Texas the other night with the linebackers walking up in the A gap. And as a lineman, one of the first things you're always supposed to do is protect the A gap. Well, Tampa, knowing that, you know, what Atlanta was going to try to do when Chris Lindstrom is like, I'm going to protect the A gap. I don't want to, you know, ask the running back to step up in front of the A gap all the time. They put Vita Vea in the B gap. They're like, hey, if Chris Lindstrom's going to block the A gap when we walk up the double A gap mug, let's get Bijan on Vita Vea, and it's good. And we've said this a number of times, both of us. Bijan's the best blitz pickup running back in the NFL right now, in my opinion. But he ain't blocking Vita Vea. I mean, that's a dude that literally weighs twice as much as him.
So, as it turns out, Lindstrom and McGarry and Neusel and Bergeron, they all have trouble blocking Vita Vea.
I would be curious, and I know this is going way too deep in the I would be curious to know at what level the mistake was. Is it a scheme thing? Is it a game plan? Is it a simple miscommunication between O-line coach and Zach Robinson? Is it because that happens. I mean, people don't understand. That happens. That happens all the time where you're like, man, they got us there. How can we fix that?
Could it be simple as, miscommunication at the line of scrimmage where maybe something was switched, an assignment was switched with a blocking assignment and someone just missed it?
It could be. It didn't. That play to me did not look like that. It looked like a rule that you fall back to and fall back to and fall back to, or maybe McGarry is supposed to add into the B gap at some point, but sometimes they're not. Like a rule you fall back to, and then when you realize, I mean, the worst case scenario, if you have that rule in place, is for a 350 whatever pound Vita Vea to be in the B gap against Bijan. Like, that's the worst possible thing that can happen.
If we don't know where Bergeron, what his health is at this point, he went out with a neck, he didn't come back, neck injury. I am worried with that guy in the middle, with Neusel, and if it's Kyle Hinton or Matt Hennessy or Elijah Wilkinson. I think Bergeron has really, really progressed into a good player. And it's not a knock on any of those guys. I just think there's a reason why Bergeron's a starter, because I think he's better. It worries me that with Vita Vea, because he can make things rough in the run game and the pass game.
Yeah, I feel like, to your point, that as far as the run game goes, this has to be your best game plan. Like, you have to put your best game plan forth if you are going to have to run with Kyle Hinton at left guard. And now, granted, we talked about it in the postgame. Kyle Hinton has made numerous starts in Atlanta Falcons uniform. Started right guard for, what, 3 games last year? Maybe even more than that. He's a serviceable player. It was curious to me to see Matt Hennessy be put at center but not left guard during the game. That was kind of interesting to me. Matt Hennessy was going into camp last year. You're starting left guard for the Atlanta Falcons and has started numerous games there. So that was kind of curious. But I will just say, I think Kyle Hinton's a good player. I think Zach Robinson has to help them out. If that's what you're going to go with, backup left guard and what is backup center, you're going to have to do some things. And I don't know if it's like a wham blocking scheme, or if Charlie Warner is able to insert himself there, or maybe you can just, I don't know, get him tired. But at some point, you're going to have to
straight up double team him.
Well, and that's easier said than done, because a lot of times double teams, you got to come off of the linebacker. He does a nice job of folding back into the play off the double teams. Sometimes for guys like that, it's better left just putting them on an island against a guy and then just saying, hey, let's create some space and see if you can move laterally fast enough to be able to do that. So I think they've got to be able to help him out, to your point, if Kyle Hinton's going to be the guy at left guard for sure.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. It is week 8 now of the NFL season, and the injuries have been piling up. Some superstars will be missing in action this weekend. We're going in the huddle next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I see you still haven't kicked your little habit over there.
Oh, you mean Mio?
I mean, I'm not trying to call you out, even though I just did.
Yeah, I love how you don't call people out. I'm not trying to call you out, but you have a problem.
It's not a call out. It's a cause for concern, a cry for concern.
I
think we've all got our vices. I do not do the whole Mio thing, but I think there's worse things to have. As y'all search my table for my diet Mountain Dew, yes.
I probably need to get my butt to the doctor and get a physical. I've still not done that since I turned 40.
Man, that's a
lot. Put on a little bit of weight since the last 6 months. I don't know what's going on with me.
Maybe you should go get it checked out.
Yeah, maybe.
It's called turning 40.
Or maybe I'll just start exercising more and eating less.
It's also part of, with the wife being pregnant, they say that the husbands tend to...
The sympathy weight.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sympathy weight, man.
But I don't feel like I'm eating more.
I asked him if that's what it was. He said, no, man, not sympathy weight.
Because I'm not eating more. Like, I'm not eating... Now, granted...
Maybe you're not eating enough. You will...
I doubt that's the issue.
No, if you're not eating enough, you will hold on to fat. Eventually, I think you'll get skinny fat. But anyway, that's another.
You know what's funny? Topic. You know what's funny? Hold on. The two people that have said the word skinny fat, that have said that to me, that have called me skinny fat, one is you.
I didn't call you skinny
you just did.
Fat.
Yeah, you
no,
just did.
I did not.
Yeah, you just did. Yeah, that's what I took. David Pollack did it too.
Oh, yeah.
You and David Pollack.
I didn't call you skinny fat.
I felt. Did you feel that way, Mike? I kind of felt
it
like
seemed like said, it was being alluded to.
No, I would never talk about your physical appearance. You were talking about it.
I'm okay if you talk about my physical appearance.
No, you said you got fat. Never mind.
Other people around here do, apparently.
I mean, I only talk about your height, but everybody else does. So
well,
okay, right?
Yeah, you know, but you know what?
Everybody else is doing it.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'8".
As a female. I'm okay with a 5'8 female talking about me being only 5'8 and a half. I'm not okay with a guy that's, 5'8 looks like a nose tackle talking about it.
Let's go in the huddle. I have no idea who you're talking about.
Okay.
Now this is a call out.
They know who they are.
Anyway, all right. We did talk a lot about the Bucks.
They're not awake.
And their injuries with Mike Evans and the hamstring going down in their game on Monday Night Football against the Ravens last night, as well as Chris Godwin, who suffered dislocated ankle. Two severe injuries for that squad.
We've talked about their injuries a little bit and talked about their matchup coming this weekend. Can we just take 1 minute and give flowers to the Baltimore Ravens and how freaking good they are? My goodness. They go down, 10-0? I mean, it just felt inevitable.
The addition
man.
Of Derrick Henry has taken that.
He's on pace to set the rushing record.
Another level.
But
yes,
you know what's crazy? First off, they're on the heater. If they were in Vegas, this would be called a heater
crazy.
Because they were 0-2 and they've just rolled off 5 straight. You brought up Derrick Henry. He essentially came in last night the same way John Smoltz used to when he was a closer. Like they might as well play Thunderstruck at the stadium because dude had, I think, like something like seven carries for maybe 20 yards. And then he comes in the fourth quarter, boom, 81, right off the bat. And he.
On one play, yeah.
And he is so nimble in his. He makes a move, like a little jump cut, not even really a jump cut, just kind of a slide cut. And then he was full speed. Like that.
The one thing I miss that we have not seen him do with the Ravens yet is throw a touchdown pass. And I got to talk to him a lot about that because he did that with the Titans a few times. Kind of the jump pass, kind of like the Tebow thing that we saw in the past. But he is like the LeBron James in the NFL in terms of taking care of your body. There was a great piece that they aired ahead of the game. His off-season program is just ridiculous, the amount that he puts into taking care of himself.
If and when the aliens come, he will be the only person that we send because he's the only person worthy of it.
I'm telling you.
Maybe Julio.
For a while.
If Julio still looks like Julio did in his prime.
Julio probably does, knowing Julio.
And he could probably run one route, right?
I think he could probably dust just about every corner in the league right now on a go route. And I don't even know the last time he ran one, but he can still do it. No, I'm with you. Can we take this narrative, though, and flush it? I'm tired of people being like, Dallas should have signed him. Derrick Henry's not doing what he does right now unless he's with Baltimore. Because I think saying that about Dallas takes away everything else that's wrong with Dallas right now and acts like Derrick Henry would fix it. They can't block. They're playing soft. They can't play defense. Dak's not playing very well. If I'm Derrick Henry, I'm looking at it going, boy, I made a good decision on that one. I would have taken a pay cut to go to Baltimore at that point. So Baltimore is perfect fit for Derrick Henry, the way they block, the way they run things. I think it's a beautiful thing.
Well, the other big news that came out yesterday was Tua and the Miami Dolphins. So the team has designated him to return from IR. He is on track to play week 8 against the Cardinals. And he actually addressed the media yesterday. There's been a lot of talk, as you all know, over the past few weeks since his last concussion happened about whether or not he should hang it up and walk away from the game. Here's Tua about how he appreciates all the concern.
It's a little, it sounds a little extreme, but look, if Tua wants to play, then that's his decision. And
him and his family.
I think there are a lot of people that want to tell him not to play, and they don't really care if he plays or not. They just think that that's the right thing to say, so they're going to say it publicly. If Tua wants to play, he should play. I don't know. I have no clue what I would do as a person that loved. Now, I mean, I didn't play, but as a person that loves the game, Mike, you've had to make decisions about health, and I think you probably had the perspective that people want to hear, but I just don't think people should tell someone what to do.
I got to tell you, man, and obviously the head injuries are a lot different because the effects of mine, and this has actually played out very recently for me. I got to a point where I had 3 surgeries in a matter of 4 years, and it had very bad injuries. Like some of them considered career enders, and I had like 3 of them, right? I had 2 Lisfrancs, which are hard to get over. And I remember thinking to myself, I want to be able to play with my kids one day in the backyard. And I, like 2 weeks ago, I was doing it, and I was running around, and I thought, I still have a little hitch in the giddy-up. You know what I mean? My son's like, Daddy, look how fast I am. And I'm trying to catch him, and I'm like, man, I'm not quite as fleet of foot as I once was. But nonetheless, I don't regret that decision at all. Like, I did not want to continue to try to scratch and claw and pick on a practice squad and do all these other things. Tua's with the head injuries different. I know that he has probably seen a dozen doctors about this. And I think that there is a misnomer a little bit about head injuries in terms of the CTE and other things going on. I think that I would trust a guy like that who has probably done as much research possible and with that organization. I will say this, though. He's my favorite college football player of all time. And I am going to have issue for the time being actually watching him in a Miami uniform because I'm going to be scared every time somebody gets around him or he tries to break free of the pocket. That's just how I'm going to feel. It is what it is. So I'm hoping for the best for him, but it's to your point, in the end, it's a personal decision, and hopefully he's making the best one for him.
So he still needs to clear concussion protocol in order to play in that week 8 game, and of course week 8 marks the earliest time that he could return from the IR window, but the Dolphins, they opened his 21-day practice window. Now, when asked if he will be wearing a Guardian cap when he comes back, here's what Tua had to say.
Well, the Guardian cap is not liked by a lot of players. I do.
Lord knows we talked to all of them during training camp.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm pretty sure it was Luke Getteke last night for Tampa Bay that was wearing it. And I think he was a miss. I think he missed the Falcons game after not clearing concussion protocol yet. Ed Reed had some. Some interesting comments, I should say, where I don't think he understood necessarily what the research that's going into the Guardian cap, but he made some boxing references, which is, I think, is a fair analogy in some ways because we don't ever care about boxers getting CTE or UFC fighters, not to the extent we do football players.
This is the thing.
A little bit
this
different.
Is the thing.
Is it?
You expect it.
Yeah.
You expect it with that because there's not the helmets, right? And I'm not saying helmets. Clearly, they do not eliminate everything, and they're trying to take steps towards having helmets, like the Guardian cap help to protect you. But when you step into the ring, you kind of know what's at risk, right? You're not wearing anything to protect yourself, and someone's knuckles, someone's fist is coming at you as hard as they can possibly hit you.
Yeah, but
I'm not saying people don't care, but people, I think people just expect that that is what comes with the territory when you're boxing with nothing to protect.
And I think there are a lot of people. I'm not saying me, but I think there are a lot of people out there that view football as the exact same thing, that it's a contact sport. And when you walk out there, you know the risk. I think that's a lot of people think. I think the league should do everything they can to protect the players within reason.
I agree that people think that too when you go to play football. But what I'm saying is you're not wearing any sort of equipment when you step out there to box other than gloves and maybe like the little bit of padding of the headgear.
So we also talk about the repetitive nature that's really the worst part of football, getting hit play after play. I think a lot of people kind of look over that in terms of boxing because it's like, what do you box a big match like once every 6 months?
Yeah, but you also train, and I'm going to tell you something.
I agree, you're probably wearing headgear in the train.
Yeah, but you still take shots, and it's not just shots to the side. I mean, there's shots everywhere that you can take in training.
I'm not saying they're not at risk. I'm just simply saying that's why more people aren't paying attention to it is kind of the question that we started with.
That's all. Okay. This hour brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. We'll get you caught up in Atlanta United because there was that 10% chance that they were going to get into the playoffs, and they did. We'll give you a preview of their matchup, and we also have them mic'd up.
Yeah, we got mic'd up. We're going to dive back into college football, some of the craziness going around, the cannibalism at the top of the SEC, and also the Minister of Culture has issued a statement. We'll talk about that coming up next. It's mic'd up. It's the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
I love my guys at Atlanta United. But, hey, Winkler, Chris Winkler, you're my dude. You're probably not listening because you're in Montreal eating poutine or whatever they call it. But maybe don't put Brad to talk next to a dump truck or a garbage truck.
I'm going to act like that's their equipment truck.
You said poutine. It's
Isn't that what they call it?
I know. You just put the heavy emphasis on
the poo. I said teen.
Is that what Mike Conte was eating?
That's
yesterday?
What he was eating, yeah.
I wondered what that was in his picture, man. I was like, yeah, the plate on the left looks fine. The one on the right, I got questions.
Poutine.
Yeah. No, I think it's awesome. We got a chance to talk to Brad. What was that last week or 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And I love his message. I love his words. And, you know, this is a team who has had to fight a ton of adversity dating back to a couple of weeks ago when they played Montreal, right?
Oh, yeah, and Joseph scored 2 goals.
Yeah, and Joseph kind of made the comment afterwards, sad to see that this team's, you know, not making the run and the environment's not what it is, and yet they go and win 2 back-to-back road games for the first time in a few months, able to put that together and find themselves back here in the playoffs.
Number one rule of being in a radio booth, if there's the call that mentions food about somewhere you're going to go, then you have to go there and post a picture on social media of food. That's how you know that the Conte was eating the poutine, or however you wanted me to pronounce
it. It was just funny.
Poutine.
Apparently only you and I are entertained.
Well.
It's just the emphasis on the poutine.
It's just, you know what? As long as we can entertain ourselves, you know, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we disgruntled Mike.
I know.
I don't know. Honestly, don't know how to say it. So I'm like scratching
and clawing
for it as well.
I thought that's how you say it.
It is.
How do you say it?
It's just funny that you. It's just funny how you say it. Poutine. But it's just.
Poutine.
It's just.
Poutine.
Poutine.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
Resident Dad doesn't like us very much. It's all right.
Resident Dad doesn't what?
Like us very much.
I just don't know how to say it, so I don't know what the joke is. Like, I thought he was saying it right.
Because it sounds like
poo. It sounds like poo.
Oh, I got you.
She thinks I put more emphasis on the poo than it should have been there.
I guess I don't know. Maybe I just have bad sense of humor.
I guess you can call in at Wake Up Call and tell us how you say poutine.
Yeah, maybe so.
Maybe you never want to eat it again.
Are you going to hit mic'd up?
I mean, I thought we were talking about the United game.
I don't know.
Let's hit a mic'd up. I kept trying. Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that college football. Let's not like talk about that poo-poo teen like Bo was just talking about a minute ago. College football, I think one of the things we have to talk about, guys, these SEC standings, we mentioned earlier LSU facing off with A&M this week. I know it sounds crazy. They are the teams that are leading the SEC right now. And my question then comes from that. Is the SEC cannibalizing itself? Because those are two teams that suffered massive early season non-conference losses. And the fact that they are making it all the way through and making a name for themselves in the SEC, LSU with the loss to USC, who is not a very good team right now, and obviously Texas A&M with the loss to Notre Dame, who would flip around and lose to what, Northern Illinois, a week or two later. So my question then becomes, who's playing the SEC title game? After Georgia cannibalizes Texas at one, obviously Georgia got knocked off by Bama. Bama's not going to be able to make that run, it doesn't seem like, after a huge loss to Tennessee this past weekend. My overall sentiment before I get to this statement from Matthew McConaughey about the SEC guys is I don't know who's good. I have no idea. And maybe you guys can give me some insight. Georgia looks like I said earlier, at two, they seem like a runaway train. The word I'm going to use for Georgia right now, inevitable. Inevitable, it feels like. But nonetheless, you're still looking at LSU, Texas A&M leading the way.
Well, I think you're counting out Florida because they're sitting here at 4-3. But I wouldn't say they're only 2-2 in the conference, and
so
they,
you're back on your bandwagon.
No, I've never been off. They still their losses are against A&M and Tennessee, who are both combined 7-1 in the conference. A&M actually leading it, you mentioned. But what's going to happen is when Florida beats Georgia, and then Texas, and then LSU, and then Ole Miss, and back to back games in November.
Yep.
They're going to be headed to Atlanta.
Is that what it is? You know what's a hard... And I had this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine.
Delusional.
The question of who are the best two teams in the SEC, because I think Georgia's the best team in the SEC right now.
I would agree with that.
Who are the best two teams in the SEC? You know what question might be harder to answer? Who's the worst two teams in the SEC?
South Carolina
just goes off against Oklahoma the other day. They look like a serviceable team. 2-point loss to Alabama a couple of weeks ago. Vanderbilt, usually the doormat, not them. Kentucky seems serviceable, right? I mean, all these teams other than Mississippi State, which I think Mississippi State's getting better. I'm not sure who's even the two worst teams in the SEC.
I would say that the two teams that have been consistently the worst throughout the entire season would be Miss State and Auburn. Now, I think they're both better than their records say. Because I think Miss State has gotten better through the season, and they have not quit at all. And Auburn is the ultimate we can't get out of our own way team. They self-destruct like they did against Missouri, where Brady Cook goes to the hospital, decides to come. I don't know if he decides, but checks out and says, "I'm going to come back, and we're gonna beat Auburn." And that's what happened. So I would say those two teams have been consistently the worst throughout the season.
Yeah. All right, I want to get to this comment made by Matthew McConaughey. First, a question. If I put $20 online, do you think either one of y'all could spell McConaughey correctly? Just throwing that out there. McConaughey. Take a jab at it, Tiff.
Absolutely not.
Take a jab at it.
Capital M, lowercase c, capital C. I'm already wrong.
No, you're going. You're good.
O-N-E.
No.
Okay, can I pick up where she left off?
Go ahead.
O-N-A.
M-C-C-O-N-A-U-G-H-E-Y.
That's correct. Are you looking on your computer?
Yeah.
No.
You looked it up.
Look.
Dude, I tried to type it in earlier
Hold on. No, that's not fair. Now, I know I looked up words on One Word Wednesday, but I didn't even touch my computer.
Your intelligence.
I'm a good speller.
Just a joke.
I want to spell a bee one time.
Let me read this really quick.
Hurt me, man.
I love this guy.
Skinny fat.
I did not call you skinny fat, I swear.
I'm going to be able to talk about this at some point. I don't know what I have to do. I don't know what
Eat
I have
some
to
poutine.
Do to get Matthew McConaughey's word selection, but it's so good. Right? This is the reason people love him narrating things. I actually tried to listen to his audiobook and I couldn't because it was just all adjectives and adverbs. Like the whole thing, that's what it was. First off, you were electric Saturday night when we hosted Georgia. Bravo. Let's continue to bring it. Even though our horns didn't get the W, you created a measurable home field advantage. But let's get real about the bottle bombing on the field glitch we had. Not cool. Bogey move, man. Yeah, that call was BS, but we're better than that. Longhorn Nation knows how to show up, show out like no other, and still keep our class. He goes on from there. But I love the bogey move and the bottle bombing comment, man. It's so good out of him. Feels like I'm watching some kind of cologne commercial listening to this guy talk about college football. The Minister of Culture, Matthew McConaughey, has spoken.
Yeah, I just need him talking about more Lincoln town cars, yeah. Personally.
Oh, my goodness.
It's, no, he's not. Right. Is he Lincoln?
I think so, because he's a Lincoln lawyer, and he has a Lincoln card.
Sure, why not? Guy. Hey, when we come back here, it will be time for the wake-up call. If you want to weigh in on what the Falcons can do to solve their pass rush woes, you can do just that by calling us at 404-726-0929. The wake-up call is next here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game. We're in our 8 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com for a guaranteed offer in your home today and start packing. It is time for the wake-up call. You can call us at 404-726-0929. And today's topic, kids, the Falcons pass rush. Since we talked about that during our show, you can tell us quickly in your call how you think they can fix their pass rush.
Finish.
And there's Bo's quick solution. So we'll go straight to the lines. We got Jaw in Cobb County. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, guys.
What's up, buddy?
I think we'll have a good right game this week. I don't wish injury on no one, but I know everyone knows Tampa lost one of their receivers last night, and I don't know about Mike Evans. So being that they might not have the number one and two receivers, we should be able to tee off next week. Yep. That's my take.
No, I think you got a good point, Mike. I think Jai's got a good point because I said it earlier. I think if you can, now that you know two home run threats are off the field, I'm not saying that McMillan and Palmer aren't guys that can hit home, you can hit home runs with. I'm just saying two explosive, physical home run threat receivers maybe come up and play a little aggressive, jam these guys at the top of the at the line of scrimmage, and maybe throw their routes off by a tick here or a tick there, and maybe it allows you the chance to get home and finish.
It'll be interesting, man. Obviously, you can't replace who will be a Hall of Famer, Mike Evans, and a perennial Pro Bowler in Chris Godwin. You can't just simply replace those guys. So I don't know if it's a simple matter of let's look at the backup wide receivers, or is it a matter of let's look at other people that will be involved. I mean, Cade Otton has come on recently. To the tune of what he had, maybe 8 catches last night. He kind of had a great night. I think you're starting to see more throws to the run backs out of the backfield. I think they'll sprinkle that in as well. And then you have to get, you know, at least a little bit of participation out of the wide receivers, although I don't know what that'll look like next week. So I'm with you, Ja, obviously talking about it. I think that the matchups definitely favor after last night. But, you know, Baker is going to move around. This is still an improved running game. I think when you look at the things that he's able to do out of the backfield, I wouldn't take that offense lightly, I guess, is kind of my takeaway from last night.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is with Baker Mayfield, the one thing I wouldn't doubt in this one is just his will. And I feel like he has this will to always win. I'm not saying this can't be a good get-right game, but I do think just having him and his mindset makes it possibly a bit more challenging.
And both of these teams probably coming off their two worst losses of the year. Right.
No, yeah, they're both coming with their worst loss of the year. I think they're also a team that's kind of, I don't want to say luck, but just kind of stumbled upon a three-headed monster in the running back backfield, in the backfield with Irving, White, and Sean Tucker. And then to your point, both of you made about Baker Mayfield, he's a guy that can move enough and pick up yards enough. I think he had he had a big run against us last year, and I can't remember, but I'm almost positive he did it again this year.
How many interceptions did he have in the last game, and they found a way to turn that around?
It's funny that you bring that up. His first four games, he only had two interceptions. His last two games. He's had five, three of which in against the Saints.
He got baited twice last night by Marlon Humphrey. Twice got baited in on guys that Marlon wasn't even covering. So he definitely was seeing a few things, and the Ravens did a good job mixing it up in front of him. But that it's matchups, man. You never know what you're getting week to week. I'm sure they'll have a game plan moving forward down there.
All right, let's go back to the lines. We have Kevin, that is, the limo driver. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you? Love the show.
I appreciate it.
I think I got a concept question. The previous defensive coordinator, we used to get a little bit of pressure. I think they go back and they look at some of those concepts, at least a small package of what he used to do, install those, maybe move Caden Ellis and Trey Anderson when healthy, start moving them to the outside to get pressure, and also maybe start running some stunts between Grady and the interior lineman. They got to do something different because right now they're not giving the offenses anything different to look at. Run some confusion patterns and also put those two speed rushers on the outside, besides the obvious of signing a free agent rusher. I'll hang up and listen. That's my idea.
Yeah.
Love the show.
Thanks,
appreciate
man.
Appreciate you.
I think there's some fruit to what you're talking about if you can get Troy Anderson back healthy and that allows maybe to free up Caden Ellis too and be involved more. Here's what I say. They are running stunts up front. It's not the same stunts that Ryan Nielsen ran, but they are running stunts with Grady, Matthew Judon, and company. The other thing you got to keep in mind, and I know that people look at these guys and kind of just – it's not a big deal to some people. The two leading sack guys you had last year in Ryan Nielsen's defense aren't here. You don't have Calais Campbell and Bud Dupree. So I think it's easy to kind of look at it and say, well, we could just do some of those things. They are trying to, but right now, from what I see, it's a personnel issue. You're not able to kind of wrap the corner when you do run the stunts. The guy who was running being the looper, who is supposed to be the one that gets home – is not able to do that right now. Whether it's Matthew Judon, you had to use Damon Harris to do it a couple of times last week. Arnold Ebiketie, you don't necessarily want to do that because he's better at rushing the edge. But they are trying to do, in my opinion, more pick stunts recently.
Yeah.
I think it'll ramp up to his point as Troy Anderson becomes more healthy and you can move Caden Ellis around more.
And I think there's two points in there that they have done it more. I think Rukurororo being active and becoming more and more of a presence in that front, because they do line changes essentially on this defense. You'll look out there and you'll have a completely different defensive line than you did the opening possession, where it's like opening possession, Tiff, it's Onyemata, you've got Grady, you've had Rook at times, and you've got Judon and maybe Ebiketie somewhere in there mixed in. Then you'll see another one where you have TQ, you'll have I have to go through some of these guys because I forget. We've got so many freaking defensive linemen. But you'll have Eddie Goldman. You'll have Zach. You'll have James Smith-Williams. And then there's times where there's Zoe. The last week it was Damon Harris. So you're doing complete line changes. But the other thing real quick is you haven't had Caden Ellis, Troy Anderson, and Nate Lamon on the field at the same – or on the, all active or healthy at the same time this year other than one game. And it just so happened to be the game that you opened the season with, and it was when they didn't even throw across the middle of the field at all for various different reasons.
Well, and here's the other thing I'll say. I think that when you look at how stunts work, the guy that's the first guy in the stunt has to be able to get penetration, right? And that's one of the things we have not been able to really do. The offensive lines that we have faced have done a good job of kind of staying on the same level, stopping the penetration. And when you can bump hips, doesn't really matter what kind of stunt they're running, right? So you have to do a better job at the first level in order for the second guy to get home on some of the stunts they're being asked to do right now.
Back to the Lions. We have Kevin, agent, or not Kevin, it's agent 78.
There it is.
That's on the line. Good morning. Nope, we got it. Okay, we lost him. Let's go to Chief. Good morning, Chief.
What up, Chief?
What's happening, Chief? But, all right. Good morning, Tribal Chief.
Sir.
Miss Blackman and All-American Mike P. Johnson.
What's up, bro?
When is Texas' next home game? Because I got a couple of water boys over here. They want to know because they can go steal some water at the next Texas. I'm just.
Makes good money over there. And you got to keep them half full, too. Half full.
They can get paid. But when it comes to the Falcons and the pass rush, the only thing I can think they really could do is go get John Abraham, Patrick Kearney, maybe Chuck Smith, and let them tutor some of these guys.
Wow, you're taking it back.
Ridiculous.
I saw Abe in the press box last week. He looks like he can still go, I'll be honest with you.
I saw Chuck on the sidelines last night because he's one of the D-line coaches for the edge rushing coaches for the Ravens.
Yeah, that seems to be working.
But no, it's funny. Look, like, I would take that in a heartbeat back to the, when the Predator was here.
Dude,
he was just so much fun to watch because I'll never forget we were at the same we were out one night and we were at the same place and we hung out with Abe for a few minutes and my buddy was like, yeah, I play flag football, but it's a physical flag football league where, you know, we have offensive linemen and blocking and stuff. And Abe goes, okay, he goes, yeah, I can get after it. I'm not afraid to hit a guy. He goes, you've never been hit by somebody like me. And he goes, well, I'm this size. And he goes, yeah, I get it. But you ain't never been hit by a guy like me. And Abe said it, it was like,
it's terrifying.
It went from we're all having fun. Now, there was nothing, no issue, nothing like that. But we're all having fun. So he went in NFL player mode, like, yeah, that's cool. But you don't go against guys like me. And that was that switch. And he was so quick.
It was like a know your role and shut your mouth
physical
moment.
Yeah. I love and by the way,
ding.
I was sitting on there. this is hilarious. Because I've said, hey, why don't you get down in 3-point stance? Yeah. Let's go at it.
I what's funny, man, is shout out to him because one of the things, because I spent a year or two as the swing tackle, and just because you're a swing tackle on a Sunday does not mean that you are the best backup option at either one, right? It just means mm-hmm. you can play both.
Yeah.
Right? Means you can do a little bit of both. So I spent a year as like the swing tackle, and obviously being that just in an emergency situation, if you have to play left tackle, which is obviously usually Abe's side, Abe was always very matter of fact about the way he went about his business when I was over there. It was like, hey, I'm gonna basically let you know that I can win when I need to, but I'm also not gonna destroy you and put you on your back. And I always loved Abe for that. Like, shout out to Abe. You know, it's like, hey, I'm just trying to get my hand placement down, Abe. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to throw on me. And at that point in his career, he wasn't that mean of a person, man. I was like, shout out to this guy.
So you're saying he let you get your moments where you needed to develop and learn stuff, but then when it was time for him to eat, he did not hold back.
We both got our work in. Yeah, without having to destroy each other.
Sounds like a true professional.
For him to destroy me. Yeah.
Much like me.
I don't even know how to follow that up, so I'm just going to go to break. We'll be back with more Falcons on the other side of the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Takes Bo back to his days in the young mosh pit.
Contact.
I do have a question, Bo.
Yes.
This was in an era where, you know, when you had your car, what was your speaker system? Because this wasn't like a bass heavy record, like so. Like,
I mean, I just had the 210s hitting, it didn't matter. Okay. I mean, I had the 210s in the wooden box, no carpet.
Blue's tweeters listening to this song.
I was about to say, this is definitely a tweeter heavy song.
You know what song I used to hear? The second song on Bone Thugs and Harmony, Eternal 1999, it's Cleveland. You know, they talk about Cleveland in it at the beginning. I can't think of the name of the actual song. But that song would hit hard if you had a couple of 10s back there, maybe 2-8s or 2-12s or whatever.
I don't know why, but I just had this mental image of Bo with long hair, like a 94 Camaro. Just rolling up sideways on a gravel road playing Limp Bizkit.
No.
Just kidding. It's getting out and saying, that's right.
How about this? You're not far off. Short hair, gravel
frosted
road,
tips.
Limp Bizkit, no frosted tips at this point. I'd grown out of those. And a 91.5 with the saline spoiler and the 2.5-inch cowl induction hood. Let's go.
In my imagination, the windows roll down, your elbows hanging out, and you're just coming towards the camera sideways. You know what I mean? Like, with your driver's windows coming towards the camera, and it stops suddenly in the gravel and go, that's right.
So we did this real quick. We did this video for Spanish class, and it was like create a skit. And it was me and my buddy, Evan, and our other buddy, Dan, and I played the police officer. Because I had like a Mustang, like, you know, and he had a truck. So he goes by, and this was a skit for school. We had an empty bottle of like tequila, and my buddy's hanging out of the window, and we had somebody film it. And I chased him on a gravel road. And my arm was out of the window there.
What in the Pauline
County? I might have been listening to Limp Bizkit. We were like 16. Our teacher said something along the lines of, I like the creativeness, but maybe don't bring a video to school with an empty alcohol bottle with you speeding down a gravel road.
You definitely stayed true to yourself. That's what I would have said to the teacher. Yeah, definitely stayed true to yourself.
And they should put 91 Mustangs on iRacing.
No, no.
The box?
No.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm good.
Then I have to hear all about it coming in the morning.
Well, tomorrow, tonight's race night, Tiff. We got Homestead. You're going to hear
one.
About it.
It is a big one.
Mm-hmm. I wish I would have made my flight earlier. Guess I'll still be here tomorrow for that.
You know what? You're going to be talking about my first victory.
Hey, this is not a Life of Squid segment yet.
My bad.
So that is on the other side of this. Falcons and Bucks this weekend. And look, Justin Simmons did talk about how the secondary can try to help the pass rush. Do you think that could be something? Like, is he on track with that?
Yeah, I think he is, but I think part of that is about how the defense plays, how they line up and play, not just the work they do in the back end.
Well, let's take a listen to what he had to say about how they can cover better.
Yeah, I think a lot of things. I think we can do a better job covering in the back end and, you know, making the quarterback hold the ball a little bit longer to give our rush a chance. I think setting them up in third and long, second and long situations where they're known pass downs. I think that helps, but you know, also at the same time, you know, knowing that, you know, and Judon and AK and you know, we got some really good rushers, and so we're going to see some chips, and it's going to delay the rush a little bit more. And the way I look at it, man, it's what can I do better from a secondary standpoint, and that's covering, communication, making sure that we're on top of it and on our job so that we can help the rush get there.
Yeah, I think that's just the nature of any defense, right? You have to find that right balance of how close do you want to walk up, what risk do you want to take in the back end, and how many guys you want to send up front, and how long it might take for the pass rush to get home. I mean, there was a point in this game where, you know, this game this past weekend against the Seahawks, where I think you're in a third down situation. You rushed seven. We rushed seven in a third down situation. Geno has to immediately get rid of the ball because there's a player in his face. And the coverage is tight enough to where he can't make an accurate throw, and then they settle for that long field goal. So I just think everything has to kind of work in conjunction. You kind of have to take your risk where you can, but also not lose sight of the fact that this defense, this pass defense, has been pretty good. I got the question on Twitter yesterday, you know, hey, our pass defense got lit up. It did, but not to the extent that Seattle's been doing most of the teams they've been playing. Geno's been going for 270-plus. He has 207 passing yards, and so it just they're still playing a good style of defense in the back end. It's just some of the issues they get seem like backbreakers when your pass rush is not as good as it is.
Well, it seems like teams can continue drives because they are able to complete third and six based on the coverage you play, and that's where it's weird. I sometimes wonder why we don't adjust, and I guess it's because they're not sure if they're going to get home. But I'll tell you, the one thing that to me is a sign that the defense could be getting right, let's take last week away as far as the outcome, and I think the offense has something to do with that with the turnovers, but you, for the second straight week, had a good day against the run game. You held Seattle. Seattle tried to run the ball. They made an effort. They ran the ball 26 times, and they only ran for 103 yards. And other than the first drive where they were able to bust maybe some outside zone runs or there's something on the edge, Mike, that they saw, I'm not 100% sure the actual concept as far as blocking and et cetera. But other than that first drive, we did good against the run game. That is and I think that Tiffany, I think that led to some of the amount of pressure rates that you got on Sunday.
Well, and it's probably just a matter of time, too. Don't want to do a whole bunch of coach speak, but once you start getting to the quarterback and you start getting hits, you start getting sacks, it's one of those things that kind of comes in bunches. And so you hope that it's something that can happen this weekend so that it spurs something for the next couple of games that are coming up on that stretch. But that's a lot of coach speak there. But it is true. In every meeting I've sat in where you've talked with coaches about how their defense can affect the quarterback, how they can start getting some sacks on the season, that's the number one thing they say. It's just a matter of having a breakthrough game and when that game comes.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of truth to that because I think you have those stat correction games where you find a good matchup or maybe the other team's playing from behind a little bit and you can smell blood in the water and maybe you are getting penetration on your twist stunts up front and able to do some things. I'm trying not to fall into this trap too, where it's like, well, they're, you know, it'll come. These guys have to go out there and make it happen, right? And I'm, you know, sitting here and we watch film back and forth, and what can they do? I love the fact that Raheem is so bullish on this pass rush. But man, it just seems like it's the same story week in and week out, where one of these guys are going to get home, what are they going to be able to do? And at the end of the day, you talk about the meteoric rise that it would be if you just simply got to the top 20 in pass rush. Like, isn't that crazy? I think, like, man, I wish we were top 20 in pass rush. Like, nobody ever says that, and yet it would be incredible if we could.
Well, you said the same story like every week. This has been the same story for kind of years, and I think that's why a lot of people have been vocalizing or tweeting at you guys about your frustration of it, because what has changed? You made moves in the draft. You go and get Matthew Judon in free agency, you know, and you're hoping that something's going to eventually happen, which we haven't seen happen yet. But I am optimistic about it just because of the direction. Like, we've seen the offense take steps this season, right? It took a couple games. It took after the first game with the Steelers, right? Everyone was hitting the panic button. And then it seemed like they continued to grow off of that matchup. So I feel like it's coming. This is just me being optimistic, though.
No, I think that's the only thing we can do at this point, right? I mean, and you made the Judon. I almost, Tiff, it's so funny. I almost went straight Squidbilly on Sunday. I'm listening to Rob Tribble and doing the flyover when I'm on my way home. And somebody calls in and legit is like, I think Judon should take off the red sleeves. I think it's allowing the offenses to identify him as the pass rusher and block him more easily. And I was just what are we doing if we've reached a point with the Falcons pass rush where we're worried about what color sleeves they're wearing?
I am not going to come at that person. What I am going to say is I know probably what it stems for. Maybe it's just, like I said before, with just the history of it. So maybe they're sitting here just trying to throw.
What edge can we get? Oh, I know. Take off the red sleeves.
Well, the red sleeves are supposed to help them draw the holding penalty. You kind of know when the guy's being held.
I'm not laughing at that person, but I am laughing at that suggestion.
Have you ever heard his story of why he started wearing red sleeves?
No.
It's absolutely hilarious. Because I remember reading this when they signed him. He said something along the lines of the turf always cuts his arms up, and he would wear white sleeves, but they'd always get bloody, and he got tired of it. So he started wearing red sleeves, and he was like, it's just something I do now.
Kind of gross.
Just wear red sleeves. He said his bed sheets would get bloody at home from his arms being cut up, and he was like, yeah, I just started wearing red sleeves, man.
Personally, I love the fact that he wears red sleeves because I can easily identify him when I am doing the broadcast, right. And I know that Judon's on the field, and when he's not, I don't know. It's just that people, I appreciate that person's passion is what I'll say. I think that's the nicest thing.
That.
Because
great way to put it.
Because all they care about is it doesn't matter what it is, the simplest thing. What's the simplest thing we can do to get this team right?
That's kind of like the compliment my mom gave me when I brought a guy home years ago. And she's like, he has a nice smile, but that's all she could really muster up to say about him.
That's
so,
no.
I was like, dang. Yeah, that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
You're going to get mad. What an underhanded compliment, man.
Can I ask you a question? You're going to get mad at me. Did you ever take him back home? Like, did you ever bring him back to your parents?
Yeah,
did he make a return visit?
I almost said something that would have gave it away. So, but yeah, he got, yeah.
Okay. So I'm just curious because that's the nicest thing.
Back in the day, but, you know, moms will burn you like that.
Yeah, what'd your dad say?
I don't think Donnie B never really talks about how
he feels.
A guy looks or something.
No, I just meant how he felt about him. Like, he didn't have a comment about him. Like,
probably very few words exchanged, but, you know, moms are always going to go in for that haymaker. Like, you want to get a bigger dress size, sweetie.
And my wife were dating, I asked her what my best physical attribute was. I was like, what's my best physical feature? She was like, you have a nice face. I was like, that's it. That's all you got.
That's good. What are you talking about? That's better than.
You know, I'm looking for just something a little more bravado. You have a friendly face, or you have a nice face. It's like, it's okay.
We did this drill. Like
that, nice face is a.
We did that drill on
better
vacation.
Better than not having a good face, I guess.
We did that drill on vacation.
Having a nice smile.
We're like, what was our favorite feature about our spouse? Because it was a couple's trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Coming up on Life of Squid.
Go ahead and get yourself in there.
Yeah, what was it?
There's some. I'll tell you what my wife's favorite feature about me is physically, and some bold trade predictions. Could a pass rusher be coming to Atlanta not from Vegas or Cleveland? Talk about next morning shifts. Sports Radio 929 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
You had a pretty good response, actually.
Because I feel like guys aren't always the one getting probably the compliments, right?
For sure.
So you probably feel hella good when some chick or some lady is like, oh, you've got really pretty eyes. I'm sure it just makes your whole day.
That's a nice compliment.
I'm going to say something, you know, personally as someone who is very grounded and knows exactly, you know, where I stand in life. I think when someone tells me that they like a physical feature about me, I take it like, well, I'm like, oh yeah, I get a little self-esteem boost. I'm not going to lie.
So what did you tell your wife?
Well, I don't think we need to talk about that.
Sounds like this was a round table, right? What was your comment for her?
Oh, I never teased that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't going to let you get away with that, at least, you know.
You've seen my wife. I think you can figure out maybe what I told her. Don't forget the Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic.
What are you doing?
What? Oh, it's beautiful, but I mean, she's got a feature that draws me in.
What is happening here?
I
could have definitely probably guessed that, yes. Yeah.
But you just put that on blast about you.
What? It's a feature.
Danae thinks it's like, please chime in, Danae. Please back me up. Is that a little motorboater?
Danae, was that on the air?
Wait, what did he?
I don't know. I don't want to be a part of this. I want to tell you that the Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic is November 25th. We have around 20 spots still available. Go to the 92.9 The Game website, the events page,
and
you can register to play with Steak Shapiro, Drew Butler, myself, Mike Johnson, Carl Dukes.
I got to get a practice round in, man.
I think Andy and Randy will be there. I know they will be. So, yeah. Day-Day will not. He's on restriction.
Yeah. You might be, too.
Oh, my gosh.
You might be, too, my friend.
I didn't say anything. I just said I think you can figure it out. Huh?
I don't know. I don't know, son.
Anyways, so I was on the For the Win website, and they have some bold trades. I know you and Garrett, Mike, were talking about in the break, and some bold trades that could happen. Before the season, you know, the trade deadline, one of which is that the Saints will trade Alvin Kamara to the Broncos.
Ooh.
Oh.
I think that's too obvious and easy.
A lot of this probably comes from the fact that Alvin was seen hugging Sean Payton. Some people were trying to read his lips. Yes. They said, come get me, whatever else it may be. I agree it's obvious, but you would have said Devontae Adams to the Jets was obvious too. And here we are. So, I don't know. Sometimes the obvious stuff needs to happen. I'd be all for it.
If I'm not mistaken, I think during his post game, Sean Payton talked about Kamara. So, I'm not certain, but I think he might have been mentioning the number of guys that came up. You know, there was a lot of emotions and all that kind of stuff exchanged afterwards. So, you never know. I won't rule it out.
It would mean
he brought Will Lutz there. He's in.
Yeah, that's a good
kicker,
call.
So.
You know, by the way, Dicker, the kicker last night, beat me in fantasy single-handedly. Like, I had Lamar go off for like 40 points, and Cameron Dicker had kicked like 5 field goals and ends up winning.
You were very careful before you started saying what you were. Very
you're
calculated.
All, you're all in time.
Very out. Calculated statement.
All
you're like,
you.
Dicker, the kicker.
All of you are.
I don't want. Kamara to go to the Broncos because you know what that would mean for the Falcons?
I don't. I mean, good
well,
things.
Actually, no. What, no, what mean? They would only play him twice because the deadline's the 5th, right? And we play him the 10th. I couldn't remember if we played him the 2nd or 5th. It's fine. All right. The trade they had the Falcons doing is they have them going back to New England and trading for Josh O'Shea.
Yeah.
And that would O'Shea has 2 sacks for them right now, which would make him our leading
this is
our leading sacker.
Don't say that.
Would you guys like Josh O'Shea coming back here, pairing back up with Judon and newly with Ebikadian?
Why are you shaking your head?
I'm not sure. I'm shaking my head over the stat that he just dropped because that's frustrating. Sure. Let's go back to the well. I mean, I don't know that it does anything, but I would love anything different at this point, I guess. You know what I mean? Something to get it cranked up a little bit. That's all.
Shake some stuff up. Are you really going to play this song?
The other one they had was DeAndre Hopkins going to the Niners, which I think is very interesting. Makes sense to me, too.
They got a lot of injuries, so it could happen. Hey, this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Or this hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate for a guaranteed offer in your home today. Go to markspain.com. We're going to find out. You guys got me all distracted. The song, you talking about your wife. I can't.
Day Day's got Twitter hitting me too. Thanks, Day Day. They're all blaming me.
What's coming up on the Steakhouse when we come back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.